I'm your host, Rabbi Linda Schreiner Khan, and welcome to Tehillah Talks, where teens engage in honest conversation with their rabbi about what it means to be Jewish in the world today. Good morning to everybody, and welcome to Tehillah Talks. And it's my pleasure this morning to be speaking with Simon, Alexis, Roma, and Jonah. And we're going to be talking about building bridges. And I'm going to start with a story. And it's actually one of my favorite Talmudic stories. There are two rabbis that are talked about in the Talmud. One, Rabbi Yochanan, and the other one, Reish Lakish. And they were always arguing with each other. And Rabbi Yochanan was sort of a regular kind of rabbi, and he went through the usual pieces of learning, and he was wise, and we're told he was also very good-looking. It's interesting, the Talmud puts that in there. And on the opposite end of the spectrum, Reish Lakish had been a bandit, and what usually says is that he became a rabbi after graduating from the School of Hard Knocks. And we don't get a sense that he was particularly handsome. He was just, he'd been a bandit. So, you know, being a bandit is a different kind of work. But with Rabbi Yochanan's encouragement, Reish Lakish quit his career as a gladiator and a bandit. And he began to forge a new path of study and teaching. And the arguments, the discussions between them were famous. They really got to it. But one day, they were arguing about whether a knife, which had become ritually impure, we won't go into the details of that, could be made pure again. Rabbi Yochanan said no, and Reish Lakish said yes. The discussion became very, very heated, and Yochanan insulted Reish Lakish by saying, well, I guess a bandit knows about banditry. In other words, as a former bandit, you know about knives. Reish Lakish was very upset. He was heartbroken. And this was like a very, very low blow. And as a matter of fact, Reish Lakish was married to Rabbi Yochanan's sister. And she said to her brother, apologize. And Reish Lakish was like so angry he couldn't do it. And we read that a short time later, Reish Lakish dies. And the rabbis try to comfort Yochanan, and they send their brightest students to study with him. And they tell him how wise he was. And he says, no, you don't understand. In my discussions with Reish Lakish, he would raise difficulties against me in an attempt to disprove my claim. And I would answer him with equal number of answers. And because of the discussion, our points of view were broadened. If we hadn't been able to have these complex conversations, clearly there were no insults with those conversations, our points of view were expanded. And so I share that story with all of you of, have you ever been in a heated conversation with someone where you honor the other person and hear what they have to say? And what happens when you really listen? Any thoughts on that? You know, when there's a really deep disagreement. Alexis, I'm going to call on you.
I guess when there's a really deep disagreement and you stop and really listen to someone, at least a lot of our first instincts are always to argue back. And so, when you stop to listen, it's also like a breath of fresh air. Like, I'm not arguing back. I'm actually listening, which is different than what we normally do first. But then I think like it was a sign of respect, which is what I got from the story there also. So like, obviously when you stop to listen, you learn more and your mindset changes, but it's also in terms of your connection with somebody else, it's a little bit bigger and it's a little bit more meaningful, because you can't really have a connection with somebody else if you're not listening to them. And if you can't do it in the time that it matters, then all the other times when you agree and you're really listening to somebody, it doesn't really matter. And so like, yes, your worldview is expanded and yes, you learn more. But then when you stop and listen in the moment, that does really matter. It, like, in my experience, it's been like a defining moment of friendship or a defining moment of like, oh, I know this person now.
So the, oh, I know this person now is that's a pretty big thing. Anybody else have an experience? Simon, you look like you want to say something.
I'm not really sure. I think that from personal experience, when there's disagreements and I'm listening to the person, you know, I kind of trust their judgment a lot. So if I have a strong opinion that differs, I think we end up coming to a compromise because I'm like, well, even if I kind of disagree, I imagine that you're right in some way. So I don't know, just from personal experience, I think it often ends in a compromise kind of.
So what you're saying is that there's a common ground that is eventually found?
In some way, yeah. Yeah, I think.
But what makes that possible? You see what I'm saying? What makes the ability to come to common ground possible? So let's unpack the process for a moment.
I think that it comes from like just wanting to come to a conclusion, just because it's unsatisfying, I think, to end with just a disagreement. So wanting to come to a conclusion is part of it. And then just what I was saying earlier about a mutual kind of respect of the other person's opinions on it and saying, like, even if I don't agree with it, the fact that you're someone I really respect and value and you feel this way, that therefore makes me feel that way, at least somewhat.
So I'm going to ask that question, Jonah. In order to have that kind of conversation, is it necessary to have respect?
Yeah, because if you don't respect that person and their like point of view, you're just gonna brush over it and not really like think about what they're saying. So you need to respect them.
So let me ask the question one more way. How do you respect somebody you don't know? It's for anybody. Is that an easy thing to do? In the story, hi Sophie, in the story that I read, Reish Lakish had been a gladiator before he became a rabbinic authority. And somehow his brother-in-law had respect for him until they had this argument about a knife, and his brother-in-law accuses him of, you know about knives because you used to be a gladiator. But how do you get to that point of, if you don't know someone, how do you respect them? What are the tools we have to start with respect? I'm going backward here, right? Trying to figure out what's step one. How do we get to step one? And what is it our internal monologue is saying? Roma, do you have a thought on that? How do we get to that place of just sort of saying, here you are? Any thoughts on that?
I'm not sure.
You're not sure? Okay. Anybody? How do we get to that place? Go ahead, Sophie.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. I feel like you just need to start by, you need to assume that you can respect somebody. So if you start a conversation, if you meet somebody for the first time, you start with the assumption that they're to be respected. And then, you know, if the conversation changes, goes poorly, you like adjust your opinion. But I feel like you should start every meeting with someone with just the assumption that they're to be respected.
Is that easy? Okay. Sophie, without speaking, shook her head. I'm going to say, Jonah, is it easy to start with that as a ground rule?
No.
No. Roma, is that easy as a ground rule?
I think it depends on the person and how they like normally approach situations. But I would say for me that I think it is easy to go into a situation like that, because I know that I should respect people off the basis, and then my opinion can change based on how they act.
Simon?
Yeah, I was also thinking that it depends on the person. Some people, I think, at least to me, can come off very disagreeable. And then those people might be harder to respect until you do have a discussion. And sometimes someone just is very similar to you, or for whatever reason, you just connect with them. And in other cases, I think it takes a little bit more intent to really, really, truly like respect somebody.
Alexis, any thoughts?
I think for me, it really depends on how the other person comes to me. Because if they're coming to me with the intent to respect me, then I'm going to give that back to them. But it's harder when they don't come, when they don't approach the conversation, you know, wanting to show me respect. If they come in way too hot and then it falls on me to kind of start that moment, but they don't seem to be reciprocating in any way, I'm a lot less inclined to do it. It's for me, it's a very much like you get what you give.
So that's a really important statement, because you get what you give. So in order to create a bridge, there's a phrase in Hebrew called tzimtzum, which means to retract, to make yourself smaller. In order to create space for somebody else or something else, you have to make yourself smaller so that you're able to create space for the other. Not an easy process, right? And as I mentioned before we began, I'm in a very diverse group, working with a very diverse group now to combat hate. And what I have to do is put any assumptions that I have away. And the way that we begin to do that is create space to hear each other's stories. Do you think it's easy for people to tell their stories and to hear other people's stories? I know, Simon, I'm going to throw it to you. Is it easy to hear other people's stories and to share your own?
I think personally, I would say I find it easy to hear other people's stories. I don't think easy is the word that I would use, but I definitely don't mind it. I mean, I think I enjoy that. And I think a lot of people enjoy that kind of connection. I do know that for many people, it is very difficult to share stories. And often it's almost like, I think sometimes people aren't, they're not sharing their stories because they almost aren't like, oh, like, it's fine if you don't respect it. I'm not even going to share my story. I'll allow you to feel however you feel. I'm not going to. And I know some people like that. And it is tough for a lot of people. But I do think that I like the idea of like retracting yourself allows that person to maybe feel more comfortable doing that. Yeah, I'm not sure if that's a fully fleshed out idea.
No. Look, we're juggling with these ideas. What do you think about holding yourself back and creating space for somebody else? Sophie?
I feel like it is important, because especially if somebody is sharing their own story, you need to listen to them and you need to like not be intruding in a way on what they're saying. Because I feel like if somebody's like telling you about something that happened to them or it's something that's really important, they don't want you to be like constantly commenting on it and like changing the subject and all that. They just want you to listen and to understand what they're saying. So I feel like for something like that, it is a way of respecting them is by listening to them.
Roma.
I think that listening is definitely easier than opening up, but I think that knowing how it feels to open up can also be important when you're listening, because you know how hard it is to be vulnerable and such. So it helps you when you're listening to someone to know that they're maybe not be comfortable sharing this with you, but they're like sharing with you. So you have to be open and you have to be like caring, I guess.
Jonah, you want to add to that?
I feel like in general, I don't have difficulty listening to other stories and like taking it in, but I know like there are a lot of people who like they just aren't able to do that, you know, and they just want to fully say what they want to say and not let the other person like have a say, you know.
Alexis, you want to put a cap on this in some way?
Yeah, I mean, I think sharing stories is hard and listening to stories is also hard. And I think part of the way that listening to stories is hard is because you, And I think, like Sophie said, you want to, you know, you want to show respect for the fact that the person is sharing their story with you, but it's hard to know what they consider respectful or what's going to make them feel comfortable, especially because I think approaching any conversation, like there's a measure of respect as well in like not expecting somebody to share their story. So in the leaving room and stepping back and leaving room for somebody to share their story, I think there's also something big about not like letting somebody not share their story, especially if you are, because maybe they don't feel comfortable sharing their story, or maybe they don't want to, or maybe they aren't quite there yet where they want to talk to other people, much less people they don't really know well. And so I think part of respect when you approach another person is letting them share their story and hearing where they come from, but also letting them not do that and understanding that they may be coming from somewhere that is different than you, and that's okay, even if you don't know where that is.
So that they have boundaries.
Yeah.
That they don't necessarily articulate, but they're there.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting Jewish practice, which I don't know how many of you have experienced personally, but when you make a Shiva call, when somebody has died and the family is sitting Shiva and mourning for that person, you go and you visit the person who's in mourning. And as opposed to it being a cocktail party where everybody's like jabbering all at once, what is supposed to happen, doesn't always happen, supposed to happen, is that the mourner has an opportunity to tell whatever stories pop to mind about that person. Now, in a normal situation where somebody's not in mourning, you may have a story that echoes whatever it is they're talking about. And you feel like, let me tell him about the time when. And in this setting, the role of the visitor is to just listen. It's incredible training, I gotta tell you. This is not easy all the time. As a rabbi, I'm in these spaces and, you know, I may have a story to share, but I'm not going to share it because that's not my job at the moment. My job at the moment is to be a really, truly active listener and maybe say things that can offer a modicum of comfort. That's it. And in some ways, that is good training for these other difficult conversations. And I will say, unfortunately, I learned how to do this not in Hebrew school, not in day school, not from my parents. I learned how to do, and not as a rabbi, I learned how to do this when somebody I was close to experienced a terrible loss that I could not relate to because it was out of my realm of knowledge. And so I realized I had to keep my mouth shut and just listen. And so it was experience that taught me. No, there was nobody saying, and here are the rules of how you do this. So I just want to say, I'm not blaming any of you if you don't know how to do this, because it just sort of, yeah. I mean, I learned it over 30 years ago, but it was an important lesson. And it's one that's transferable in these other spaces when you're with people who are not exactly like you. But Simon said something earlier that I really do want to go back to, because it's really this notion of creating compromise. When you are with somebody and you don't agree at the outset, and that you find some strand of commonality. And it sounded from the way you put it that you had experienced that. How hard was that?
I think it depends on the situation. But it
always,
but it can be really, really tough, especially if it's something that, you know, people feel like if you feel very passionate about it, that strand of commonality is, even in some ways, it doesn't always mean that you're coming to a complete compromise, but more just like in my experience, just a conclusive, like, I respect my own opinions. I respect your opinions, and leaving it at that. And that is hard because you're admitting a sort of defeat. You're kind of saying, okay, I am not, my opinion isn't more right or better or more educated or anything like that. but you're just accepting that there are two kind of views on it. Whether you come to a complete compromise or not, I think it's all still kind of just mutual respect.
Does it have to be compromise, or can it be just the simple point of saying, you have your truth and I have my truth, and they're not mutually exclusive? Is that good enough?
Sometimes it can be. Sometimes I think no.
Okay.
I've had times where I can't just say, oh, well, yeah, because I'm like, well, I feel passionately about this. But I think that it's important to get there if you can, and that it's a hard thing to get there, but it's a good thing.
So we'll go back to this idea of compromise. I want to ask you if, I mean, I turned to Simon because he brought it up, but have you actively been taught how to compromise in any setting?
Is this to me or just to?
To everybody, but you can go first. So has anybody taught you how to compromise?
People have told me to compromise, but I don't know if that's slightly different. So I can't think of a time someone's taught me.
Alexis?
I think they've tried really hard, but it's very hard to just tell somebody, like, you need to agree to disagree, or you need to find common ground, or you need to find somewhere that, you know, you can both agree on, but then just say that applies to everything always, all the time. Because it doesn't, because sometimes compromise isn't that. And so, like, in theory, I've been taught how to compromise. In practice, I really don't think so.
Roma, compromise? A lesson?
I don't think I've ever really been taught to compromise, but it's definitely something I've been able to learn through experience.
Jonah?
I agree with Roma. Like, it's just experience, not a specific time.
And Sophie?
Yeah, it's experience. You get told, oh, you should compromise, but they don't actually tell you how to make those compromises.
It was interesting. I mentioned before that I'm in a group and there's a facilitator, and he was telling us that when he first became the leader of an organization, they did everything by consensus. And there was a point at which consensus simply didn't work because everybody couldn't agree on everything. And so instead, it became a process of hearing everybody. He would make a decision, go back to the group and say, can you all live with this? I don't know if that's compromise or not, but it's another way of taking in the information. We're living in a world, the reason I think this is an important conversation is we're living in a world where people are standing in their corners saying, I'm right and you're not, and I can't talk to you because you're not going to hear me, and forget about it. So I'm looking to you for your wisdom at your age, to how do we get out of our corners? That's really the reason I wanted to talk about this. How do we get out of our corners so that we can be better? I can talk about my teacher and use Jewish examples and say, yes, and I use it in meetings that, you know, I'm sitting in a circle and I can say to everybody in the circle, you all have a different perspective on the center spot on the floor because we're sitting in a circle. Right? We see things differently because our perspective is different, or sitting around a table, our perspective is different. But that doesn't necessarily get us to the point of how do we leave our corners. So that's what I'm going to ask you. Do you have any thoughts of how to leave the corner that you're in? Or for those, I'm going to say that you guys are not corner people. Just say that because I know you. But what advice would you give in settings where people are just embedded in their corners and seem incapable of moving? How do we get from that place? And any thoughts? Yeah, Sophie, and then Alexis.
I feel like you have to start small. You're not going to be stuck on one thing and then suddenly be able to like jump to something else. You need to go like a bit by bit. And I feel like it takes a lot of practice, because if you're always used to sticking to the same thing, to hiding in one corner, you're not going to know particularly how to leave it. So yeah, I feel like you need to stay small and get practice.
Small steps. Alexis?
I was going to say something similar, but I think if you come in like immediately, like I think part of it is casting off what you think. So if you come in and you think this person is going to react in a certain way to what you're saying, and you expect that to happen, you're going to make it happen, which is a really bad way, I think, to approach any sort of conversation, much less one where you're disagreeing with the person. But like, also, I think it's important to not start at the, I'm trying to move you out of your corner, I'm trying to get you to listen to me, or I'm trying to tell you you're wrong. It's like what I said earlier, where you get what you give. If you come in with the, I'm going to get you to move, they're going to give that back to you. And like, nobody wants anybody to come in a conversation with them and tell you that you're wrong. It's not a fun thing to have happen to you. And then like, more than that, if this person is somebody that is worth having a conversation with, you should respect their boundaries, and they should respect your own. And if that means give what you get. So if they come in as hot as the sun, and that is not something you can do, or not something you think worth is pursuing, then like, don't. I think sometimes knowing when to get out of a situation is equally as important as getting into one. But if a conversation is worth having, then I think it goes back to that idea of give what you get and get what you give, and have boundaries and respect other people's boundaries, and learn where they're at and learn where you're at. Not even where they're coming from, but just where they're at in this moment.
Getting out of corners. Simon.
It's a tough one. I don't know. I think a lot of it just has to do with being comfortable with being wrong. Because getting out of your corner, there's like a risk that, you know, you might realize, oh, you know, I might change my mind. I might think that I'm wrong. And I think that's, and I think disconnecting yourself from your like ideas or your opinions on something is part of that. So just knowing that, you know, it's okay for your mind to change, and it's okay to have a disagreement with someone and then, you know, start to agree with them, and just being okay with disconnecting yourself from those ideas, because I think sometimes people kind of latch themselves onto that and then they don't feel comfortable kind of, yeah, changing their mind.
So just to recap, Sophie says, take it slow. Take it in small bits. Alexis says, if it's too bad, get out, because this isn't going to go anywhere. But what you give, you get. Simon is saying, put one foot forward, take the risk, see what happens. Jonah and Roma, what do you want to add to that as the advice you give to the nattering older class who's feeling somewhat stuck at the moment? Roma?
I think that in like friendships and relationships and such, it's important that to realize that like, if you want to keep that friendship, and if you like, you need to make compromises, and you can't be stuck in that position, because if a friendship is really that important to you, you'll be willing to make that compromise.
And I want to say, before I hear from Jonah, sometimes the people you're talking to are not your friends. Sometimes the people you're talking to are people that one may tend to put in boxes and say, oh, I see what you look like. Therefore, I may know where you work. I may know a little bit about you, and I'm going to put you in a very specific box. And then all of a sudden you hear from that person and you say, oh, well, that was bad. That box does not fit. So what do I do now? Jonah, give us some of your wisdom on this. How to get out of our corners.
I feel like if you have a really strong belief, it's probably like, you probably have like some like people around you who also share that belief or some influence, right? And so I feel like one of the ways to get out of that is just to like connect with people who have different beliefs than you, and like get a bond with them, and then become comfortable to hearing beliefs that aren't yours, but like in a more, not in an argumentative way, you know?
So it's about, it goes back to sort of where we began, which is the ability to hear and listen to one another. I just want to say, this has been an awesome conversation. And I say this all the time, the wisdom that you all have is one that we all should be listening to. So I want to thank you all for joining me this morning, Simon and Alexis and Roma and Jonah and Sophie. I think if we can just pay attention to what you've said this morning, it might make it just a tad better. It's not going to solve the problem, but this is, I go back to what Sophie said. This is not overnight. This is step by step. This takes patience. And I'll tell you that the places where students of different perspectives are most successful are places where that existed before, where there are forums where students can talk to one another that are safe spaces. Those are the places where progress happens because it's not coming in hot. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your wisdom. I'll end with a story. There was somebody who had chosen to be Jewish, was in a Jewish setting. She had originally, I think she was Catholic to begin with. But the point was, she was in this place. She was actually not Jewish. She was an observing Catholic. She came to a Jewish space. Everybody's arguing. They're yelling at each other. They're disagreeing about this and that. And she's like, whoa, this is like, what is going on here? They finish their conversation with everybody having a different point of view. And then they say, Shabbat Shalom, give each other a hug, have a good week. And she's like, what just happened? How could they all have such differing opinions and still be nice to each other? I'm going to say I've witnessed that over the years. It ain't easy. And the bottom line is, I go back to Sophie. It takes time. It's inch by inch, and you guys are all really terrific exemplars of the ability to hear and listen to one another. Have a great day, and thank you all so very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, have a nice day.
You too. Thank you for taking the time to listen to Tehillah Talks. For more information about Tehillah, go to congregationtehillah.org. Tune in next time when our teens continue to reflect on issues of the day through a Jewish lens.